The following episode of the 9 p.m. Edict contains strong language, because today, why wouldn't it?
Okay, are we all set?
Yeah, hang on, Tone, I'll just get the door. Oh, and some wine too, obviously. Fuck! Fuck, now what?
The best thing we can do is deal with the spill motion as quickly as possible and put it behind us.
Sunday, the 8th of February 2015. Yes, it's another podcast hitting the internets after just 1 week.
I can't believe this. This is like a nightmare.
Crusader Rabbit has explained in detail why he should stay as Prime Minister.
The only question for our party is, do we want to reduce ourselves to the level of the Labor Party in dragging down a first-term Prime Minister?
But everything seems to be a bit chaotic, and Malcolm Turnbull seems to know why.
Look, he's the Prime Minister, he's made a captain's call.
This is the 9 p.m. Sleepless in Canberra. Well, how can we ignore the obvious? Clearly it's the biggest story this week. It's bigger than big. It's huge. It's huger than huge even. It's inevitable, really, that we spend at least a few minutes on this massive, massive story.
A bizarre and disgusting case of animal cruelty has surfaced in Palm Beach County.
61-year-old Manuel Gonzalez of Wellington pleaded guilty to animal cruelty and sexual activity with an animal. Investigators say he was engaging in sexual acts with the family dog, a chihuahua like this one, when his wife caught him on one of their home security cameras. According to PetAbuse.com, Florida is the number one state in the country for the most severe animal crime.
There's a lot of times we wish there was more we could do. There's wish there were stronger laws. We wish people would immediately go to jail and stay there.
Al Pefley, CBS 12 News.
Florida, eh? Where else would it be? No, look, I actually do know what the big story is today. Obviously, it's, once more, it's all about Crusader Rabbit. Yeah, look, what can I say? I'm recording this podcast on a Sunday evening. The Liberal Party Room meeting is 9 a.m. Monday morning. Less than 12 hours after this podcast goes live, it'll be out of date. So I'm not going to go into the tiny details of this. But what I will say is that, yes, kids, Crusader Rabbit's final plea to stay on as Prime Minister was based on the assumption that no one at all understands how Australian elections work, that the voters choose the Prime Minister, when we all know the party chooses the Prime Minister and we vote for our local MP. And all he seems to be worried about today is what it'll look like. I've already played some fragments, but here is this morning's press conference in its entirety. Go, Tone.
Okay, are we all set? Look, the last thing Australia needs right now is instability and uncertainty. On reflection and after talking to my colleagues, I've decided that the best thing we can do is deal with the spill motion as quickly as possible and put it behind us. Accordingly, I've asked the whip, Mr. Philip Ruddock, to convene a party room meeting at 9 o'clock on Monday morning to deal with this matter. The only question for our party is, do we want to reduce ourselves to the level of the Labor Party in dragging down a first-term Prime Minister? Now, obviously, I've been talking to many colleagues over the last few days, and my very strong sense is that we are determined to do what we were elected to do, to clean up Labor's mess and to give our people the economic security and the national security that they need and deserve.
And that's it. Crusader Rabbit just walks out at this point, leaving us with what I'm sure you'll agree is just such a compelling argument. Short tone. Look, on Thursday, The Guardian had the headline on a story, Tony Abbott very confident that he will still be Prime Minister next week. Well, look, Tone, I was once very confident that I could drink the rest of that bottle of vodka over there and still get home. Confidence and a realistic assessment of reality are completely different things, mate. There's no way the Liberal Party can pretend that these events haven't been anything other than a complete and utter shambles. It's going to take ages for them to recover. Thank God Philip Ruddock isn't alive to see this. Now, while I clearly can't go into all of the ins and out of this, because as I say, it'll be out of date in the morning, there's three things I want to mention. One, music. Earlier today, I asked people for their suggestions for a theme song that had sum up the Rabster's time as PM. Well, I suppose I should say his time as PM so far, but hey, if we're not down to the final hours, the final countdown, then I will be very, very surprised. Several people suggested the music you hear now, Yakety Sax, which, of course, you will know as the theme music from The Benny Hill Show. Tim Politico suggested I Don't Like Mondays. Obvious, perhaps, but yes, the mass killing theme certainly seems appropriate. Stu and Els suggested something from the Looney Tunes cartoons, Kill the Wabbit, which is to the tune of Ride of the Valkyries. Look that one up yourself. I'm going to zoom through these. I'm not going to mention everyone, and I don't have time to play them. Alan Lewis suggested Talking Heads' Road to Nowhere. Paul Kidd suggested Plastic Patron's Sa Plan Pour Moi, because it makes as much sense as anything else in the last 6 months. Fair point. And there were many more. I'll put them up on a website at some point. Pelagicat in Melbourne suggested this tune from D-Ream. Except for two reasons. One, that song was the theme music for New Labour under Tony Blair in 19-whatever. Obviously, Tony Blair is a god and a global warrior for truth and justice in the Britannic way and perfect in every way, but he's not a Tory. Two, things needn't get better at all under Mr. Turnbull. In fact, they could get worse, much worse. Remember, as Phil Francisco reminded us on Twitter today, who has implemented Rupert Murdoch's agenda to the Emperor's greatest satisfaction? Well, it's Malcolm Turnbull, who smashed the ABC and the National Broadband Network. Turnbull is just another member of the Liberal Party. The policies are set by the Liberal Party, and it's the Prime Minister's job to progress those policies as best he can, or she can, with the team that they build around them. Which brings me to number two, personalities. I got a lot of comments during the week that I shouldn't have been having a go at Tony Abbott because, you know, politics, it shouldn't be about personalities, it should be about the policies. Well, quite frankly, that's bollocks. And this is where things get a bit serious. Do you remember when Tony Abbott did his reset thing in December? Amongst other things, he appointed Suzanne Ley as Minister for Health, replacing that answer to a question nobody asked, Peter Dutton. I think it was a good move. Suzanne Ley is an intelligent, worldly woman who pilots her own aircraft as she flies around her massive rural electorate. She works hard. God knows we need someone who works hard rather than being like a seat warmer in the federal government. But there's a photograph that was taken that day by Fairfax Media's photographer Andrew Mears. Now, I've put it on the podcast website. Have a look. Tony Abbott with Suzanne Ley, Prime Minister with new cabinet member. And where is his right hand? It's somewhere behind her hips, up close. Is he touching her ass? Well, it's impossible to tell from that one photograph. But why the fuck is his hand anywhere near her below the waist? Anywhere near her at all? And why is the strong-minded, worldly woman that is Suzanne Leigh exhibiting all of the body language of someone in fear? Her shoulders are hunched, her hands are crossed tightly in front of her, her eyes are looking away from Abbott down to the ground. We can't see her feet, but from the placement of her legs, the angle of her hips, it looks to me like she's got her feet turned inwards. In brief, she looks stressed. Now, okay, this was an official photo op, they're stressful circumstances, this is just one frame, maybe she was in motion at the time and we're seeing things out of context, but personally, I doubt it. Abbott has had stories circulating around him for years. The claim that he punched the wall either side of a female student politician, though he denies it and we have no independent witnesses, kind of that stuff doesn't come out of nowhere. And we see comments like his just dumb 1950s comment about women and ironing. Now, you're perfectly welcome to look at this picture and interpret it in your own way. In fact, I welcome that. I would really like to hear your comments. I would really like to be wrong. But to me, from that one photo, and yes, I have a certain disrespect for Abbott, which is going to colour my perceptions, but it looks to me like there's a creepy sexual power play going on there. Now, do you remember when that guy, Julian Blank, the American, the pickup artist, had his visa cancelled and was chucked out of Australia? Here's how ABC Radio's PM program described his work.
Blanc posts videos of himself choking women and forcing their faces into his crutch, among other things. His seminar tour was designed as an opportunity for others to learn his methods of manipulation and psychological games to attract women.
You should have, you know, like multiple little excuses you can give her to get her one step closer to your place. Like, who here knows between where they're going to pull the girl, like where you're staying and where you're going, how are you going to get her out of the club? How are you going to get her there? How are you going to get her there? How are you going to get her in your room? Okay? How are you going to get her on your bed? How are you going to get her clothes off? Okay? How are you going to transition into sex? What if she says this? Then what are you going to say?
But some of his lessons on seduction include putting his hands around a woman's neck to choke her or forcing a woman's face onto his groin.
At least in Tokyo, if you're a white male, you can do what you want.
Yeah, charming, Julian. It was on this occasion that the then immigration minister, Scott Morrison, minister for being a cunt to everyone on the fucking planet, actually said something that I thoroughly agree with.
This guy wasn't putting forward political ideas. He was putting a view that was derogatory to women, and that's just something that our values abhor in this country.
Julian Blanc was quite rightly thrown out of Australia, and yet here we've got a photograph which for all the world looks like Prime Minister Tony Abbott has his hand on or near a woman's buttocks and he is her boss. They say rape isn't about sex but about power. Well, putting your hand on a woman's ass while you're in a business or political meeting isn't about sex either. It's about power. In a business, in a community organisation, the mere existence of this photograph would be reason for Tony Abbott to be hauled in front of a human resources group to explain himself, and rightly so. Why is this left to slide by the Liberal Party? Why? The other day, another female Member of Parliament, Teresa Gambaro, went on record to say that Liberal MPs have been living under a reign of fear for 5 years. Guy Rundle, who's Crikey's writer-at-large, said today, quote, "Gambaro is practically accusing a man who may still be her leader and Prime Minister tomorrow of bullying thuggery." He's got a point. She's got a point. And perhaps this is the time for me to finally mention Julie Bishop. Apparently, Julie Bishop's nickname amongst male members of the Liberal Party of Western Australia, and I've had this confirmed by two different people who both have excellent political connections, and I have a witness to this conversation. They call Julie Bishop the mattress. Now, whether that implication is true or not, and I'm really not interested in Julie Bishop's past or private life, quite frankly. That's her own business. But if this is how men in her party talk about women, then there is something deeply fucking wrong here. Deeply fucking wrong. Now, it would be easy for me as a man to say that a woman like Suzanne Leigh or Julie Bishop or anyone should stop talking when, you know, they're with Tony Abbott, pause, take a deliberate, long silence, look them straight in the eye and say slowly and deliberately, take your fucking hand off me. But of course, they can't, can they? Because it's the boss. It's your career. This is the whole power game, which makes this sort of male-on-female sexual pressure so totally wrong. Why does the existence of this photograph not cause a serious investigation within the Liberal Party? And don't get me wrong, I don't imagine the Labour Party would be any fucking different. Tony Abbott and Julian Blanc are just 2 points on the same scale, right? Right. I can't really go any further than that on that point. And yet here they go on about we need strong leaders, strong, strong, strong. Well, you need someone with a stronger stomach even than mine to plumb the psychosexual depths of the Liberal Party's leadership issues, don't we, Christopher? Which I suppose brings me to point three, the promise to myself that after last week's episode,
Unwind with Chill,
that this week's episode, well, in constructing it, I wouldn't put myself through deliberate psychological torture to make the podcast. So much for that. Yahoo, what a success. Hello, I'm Stilgarian. Welcome to The Edict. This podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and your generous subscriptions and one-off donations. This episode, I must say thank you and welcome to, nobody really. There haven't been any new subscribers since last episode. Well, it's only been a week. I will not come down upon you too harshly for that, but if you don't get some fucking new subscribers in before the next episode, there will be hell to pay. But I will say thank you to Jono Ferguson for a generous one-off donation. Thank you very much, sir. You too can do what Jono Ferguson did and make a one-off contribution at the Skank Media website, skank.com.au/tip. And if you want to become a subscriber and make a regular monthly contribution, that's at skank.com.au/subscribe. I will point out yet again that everyone who subscribes through to the end of February will get a free copy of an ebook collection of my writing, all the stuff that I've written on surveillance and politics and the Five Eyes stuff since Mr. Edward Snowden's revelation some 18 months ago. Some of you have seen a preview of that a while back. Well, this is an updated edition which will include everything up to the present day. So do go over to the Skank Media website and subscribe, skank.com.au/subscribe. Go on, be an Australian. Elephant stamp time. Every episode I give an elephant stamp of approval to people who have been exceptional in the category of thinking. And I have two nominations today. The first is Charles Cotton, known as his friends as Chaz Cotton, who is a senior representative of the National Rifle Association, the NRA, in the American state of Texas, who this week was recorded as saying that teachers should be allowed to use force against students in public schools, that is, corporal punishment, up to and including deadly force, to save people like himself from having to, quote, put a bullet in them when they become criminals. And to make matters worse, as the Raw Story story puts it, and there's a link on the podcast website, Charles Cotton made the remarks in such a way as to appear to subtly threaten a black female state legislator's family. Excellent work, Chaz Cotton. Yeah, it's all about saving you the effort of having to put a bullet into these kids. Elephant stamp for you, sir. And the second elephant stamp goes to Caitlin Stasey. Now, I have no idea who she is or where she's from or anything like this, but on Tuesday, Caitlin Stasey tweeted the following tweet. The UN should ensure that animals be removed from countries that are in conflict. They are impartial and suffer immeasurably. Yeah, Miss Stasey, I don't think you've really thought this through, have you? Remove animals from countries that are in conflict. So let's pick, the Sudan? Iraq? Afghanistan? Afghanistan will do. Afghanistan is in conflict. Let's take all of the animals out of Afghanistan. Not just those that are in immediate danger, but all of them. So you take away people's transport animals like donkeys and mules that haul carts. I don't think they have ox carts in Afghanistan. I think it's more donkey and mule based. Let's take away their cows so they don't have any milk. Let's take away their chickens so they don't have any eggs. Let's take away their pigs. Oh, hang on, Islamic country, let's skip the pigs. Let's take away their dogs so there's no one to guard their premises at night. Let's take away all of that because you, someone who is not there, have decided that because some parts of this country have some kind of conflict happening that the animals might suffer. How about the people? I think the people are suffering. And what you want to do is take away their food and drink and power. You moron. Elephant stamp of approval to Caitlin Stasey. If you have any suggestions for anybody or anything that earns or deserves an elephant stamp of approval between now and when I get the next episode of this podcast out, please let me know. Because let's face it, Charles Cotton and Caitlin Stasey are not the only fuckwits on the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, it has reached that point in the podcast where it is now up to you to inject your brain into the proceedings, because it's the time where I play your audio comments. Now, I'll give you the details in a moment. They're on the podcast website anyway. You really should just go and look, but I will read them out in a minute. Don't be so impatient. But to entice you into sending in an audio comment this month, to seduce you, to encourage you to, yes, seduce you. Just imagine that I'm Tony Abbott and my hand is on, yeah, that's wrong now, isn't it? Anyway, if you send in an audio comment before the end of February, you will be in the running for me to choose you as the most interesting, my judgment. But if I do judge your contribution the most interesting for the month, you will get a copy of a book, namely John Birmingham's latest novel, Emergence, which I don't have in front of me. Hang on. Just get it. So it's just in the other room. Here it is. It's on paper. Chairback. Headphones. John Birmingham, look him up. But he's. This is the first in which is obviously a series where you think that there is just something weird, some terrorist incident going down at an oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico, but it turns out that they have drilled deeper than ever before and unleashed, uncapped, evil creatures that had been imprisoned within the earth for millennia. And now they have been released, thanks to the wonderful people from a petrochemical corporation. And the book itself, I've read it, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's not too stained, and so now it needs to go on to another reader, and that could be you, so you should send in an audio comment. Details on how to do that in a moment, but the most prolific of our audio commenters so far has been a gentleman by the name of Nicholas Fryer, who managed to survive sharing a house with me some years ago. You should ignore most of what he says because, well, he knows too much. But look, forget what he says. On the other hand, I suppose I know too much too. This is that strategy that they referred to in the Cold War era as mutually assured destruction. I'm suddenly a lot more relaxed. So I've just remembered a few things. Like the soccer match on your birthday, Mr. Nicholas Fry. Anyway, here is this episode's audio comment from Mr. Nicholas Fry. Do enjoy.
A friend of mine has been trying to raise the level of my consciousness. This is, I'm sure, not a staggeringly difficult task, coming as we are off such a low base, but the results have been interesting. Most recently, I've been learning about the French post-structuralists, and in particular, Michel Foucault. As someone whose original training was in the physical sciences, and latterly in applied soul destruction, these are new vistas. Monsieur Foucault, as I no doubt imperfectly understand matters, was one of the leading lights of something called critical theory, and among his many contributions is the notion that truth is arbitrary and culturally based. Truth is merely a construct of privileged discourses, while alternative views, or subjugated discourses, are marginalised and denigrated. Here there are boundless planes in which to play, and the freedom afforded by the simple step of denying the existence of reality looks pretty damn exhilarating when viewed from the sofa opposite. And it's been through this giddy lens that I've been absorbing the surprising news from Canberra that the Rudd-Gillard soap opera was not, as I'd thought, an easily dismissed interregnum between periods of actual governance, but a groundbreaking piece of avant-garde performance art that's opened the way to the future. It was like Michel Duchamp's urinal, announcing the birth of the modern. And as is the way of these things, other more daring souls are now taking chaos and dysfunction, so shocking just a short time ago, as the mere jumping-off points for the next stage in artistic development. Welcome to the new abnormal. So much that was mysterious about the current government becomes clear when one realises that it's merely reacting to the current trends in artistic expression. Starting from the Labour Party's position that governing need not be about government, they've decided that it need not be about anything at all. Once the concept of the actual has been discarded for the bourgeois affectation that it is, one's free to find a new dominant discourse. One, for example, in which we have an education minister who believes that most people shouldn't be educated, an immigration minister whose sole job is to imprison anyone trying to immigrate, an environment minister who's pretty sure there's no such thing as the environment, a communications minister deeply sceptical of the benefits of communications technology, and an attorney general who wants to strengthen democracy by locking up any journalist who might find out what the government's doing. This is government in the form of absurdist theatre, and I, for one, can't wait to see what the next one's going to be like. Freeform interpretive dance is my bet. On the subject of the Minister for Education, I was also not sure what to make of last week's news from the University of Adelaide that he is now the world's first cabinet member successfully to have been crossbred with a poodle, but that the resulting hybrid cannot easily be distinguished from its progenitor. Strange times indeed. In the meantime, Tuesday beckons. Somebody get the crisps.
Foucault. Nicholas. Foucault. Jesus fucking Christ. Please, anyone, send in your audio comments before Nicholas Fryer takes us down the rabbit hole of the Illuminatus trilogy crossed with James Joyce. Either Skype to Stilgerian, phone Sydney, +612 8011 3733, or record your thoughts on the most sophisticated audio recording equipment that you can find at your disposal and email me the resulting file. The details are on the website, and you too could be in the running for Mr. John Birmingham's latest novel. Otherwise, Fryer gets it, because he's the only entrant so far. And that would just look like, well, not nepotism, but it'd just be wrong. It'd just be wrong in so many ways. Please send me your thoughts. ¶¶ Well, while I've been recording this podcast, it now approaches 10 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday night. Crusader Rabbit has done an interview a couple of hours ago with Chris Ullman from ABC Television. It's about 5 minutes long. There's a link on the podcast website. Here's just a kind of snippet of it.
The last thing we want is to see another meltdown in government. We had meltdowns under the former government. It was, frankly, a bit embarrassing. It wasn't right. It wasn't good for our country, and I think it's very important that we avoid that with this government. That said, obviously, it's a pretty chastening experience to have a spill motion moved on you after just 16 months in government, a very chastening experience, and I am determined that my government, if it continues after tomorrow, will learn from this experience, will be different and better this year than we were in every respect last year.
Prime Minister, this is already embarrassing. You already look like the Labor Party to everyone, perhaps, but you.
No. When you roll a Prime Minister, you look like the Labor Party.
That could happen?
It could. Obviously, I respect the party room. I absolutely respect the party room, and the party room will be getting a secret ballot.
Now, here's an interesting question from Ullman.
Now, you've said that you're chastened, that you've learned from this experience. Are you bargaining for votes? Have you offered Senator Sean Edwards from South Australia an open tender for the subs contract, which would be a change of policy?
What Ullman is talking about here is a plan to buy 12 new submarines for the Royal Australian Navy to replace the 6 Collins-class submarines. It's obviously a multi-billion dollar project, and the impression we'd had so far is that this might just go straight to a Japanese manufacturer or a German manufacturer and we'd buy off the shelf.
No. What we have always intended to have is a competitive evaluation process. That's what we've always intended to have.
But we didn't know that until today.
Well, we are still a long way from doing this. I mean, the decision on this needs to be made by the end of the year, I would say, at the latest. But nevertheless, it is something which is still evolving, as you'd expect.
That's a $40 billion bargain you've just struck, isn't it?
Well no. You would expect the Australian government to want to get the best value. You would expect the Australian government to want to get the best product. And you would expect the Australian government to give Australian suppliers a fair go.
And yet, somehow the Prime Minister is announcing a major defence purchasing policy decision on the eve of a vote for his future. Respect to Ullman, he put the next question as it needed to be put.
Aren't we seeing the rather terrifying and dispiriting side of a Prime Minister bargaining for his life, and not even just for his life, but just for some more time?
No, what you are seeing is the democratic process in action.
The democratic process in action, Prime Minister? the democratic process. Sir, I think that calls for an edict. This is edict number 35. Actually, it's not so much an edict, it's more just a wish, a personal wish. Throughout this week, I have watched Prime Minister Tony Abbott be the pugilist that he is, getting ready to punch out the last punch to hold his place as Prime Minister of Australia. Mate, if you can't have it, don't let any other bastard have it, right? Go the full spite. As a woman in the pub next to me on Friday said, no one does spite like a Catholic. And you can do it, Tony Abbott. You can do this. If you can't be Prime Minister, then no other person in the Liberal Party will be Prime Minister for years. Get on the whiskey. It's 10:15 Sunday night as I say these words. Do a bottle. Just sink the whole bottle. Make a list of every bastard that you hate. Then at dawn tomorrow morning in that blurry whiskey hangover fub, grab a Coke. 2 grams of coke. Just get coked up beyond all belief. And at breakfast time, get the car over to the Governor General's residence and call a general election. Because Labor is so far ahead in the polls right now, and your behaviour in the last 48 hours will just be the icing on the cake, the cocaine on the cake for that. Mate, you will burn the Liberal Party and Labor, even with that incompetent Muppet Bobo shitface as leader, whoever he is. I don't know. Who is this man who runs the Labor Party? Fucking do it. It'd be hilarious. Go out in style, Tony Abbott. Do it for Australia. Yeah, except to judge by the sound of him in that interview, I don't think he's got it in him anymore, do you? Ah, well, that's it for the edict for now. If you'd like to leave an audio comment, Skype to Stilgerian, or phone Sydney, +61 280113733. Don't forget, there is a prize for what I judge as the best comment for the month of February. The next episode of the 9pm edict will be whenever I fucking all feel like it. Until then, I'm Stilgerian. See you then.
The 9pm edict is a Skank Media production. Sorry.